This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We are halfway to the 2019 World Series. It is amazing the way the first few weeks of October have played out. I guess two and a half. We're not only dead center of our work week with the Hump Show, but we are dead center of the month of October. The Washington Nationals in their first ever World Series. And this is first ever as a franchise. The Montreal Expos, which is the franchise that ended up moving to the D.C. area, never reached a World Series either. This is some kind of history. And there's a twist. There's always a twist. And there's redemption. Because there's always redemption in sports. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Good morning to you. If it's your hump day, you got this. If I can get through my hump show, you can get through your hump day. That's the deal we make every week. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. They found a better way to mortgage so you can focus on making your new house a home. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Sometimes life and sports are cyclical. In fact, most times life and sports are cyclical. It's actually what I based my football column on this week. The fact that what's old is new again. I dropped a 90s reference in there because you know the 90s are back. I don't know if you have to go that far back for this bit of redemption for the Washington Nationals because they started in the nation's capital in 2005. But boy, have they had a dubious stretch of underachieving, falling short, falling flat on their faces. And this, the most unlikely campaign for a team that would finally reach the promised land, losing their superstar, the face of their franchise in Bryce Harper, and then starting out 19-31. But that's ancient history, right? Going back to late May, they have one of the best records in Major League Baseball. They've three times stared elimination in the face in this month alone. Sitting on a 3-0 series lead against the Cardinals in the NLCS, there was some synergy to what we saw in the first inning of Game 4 last night.
Now the set by the right-hander, the kick and the pitch. Swing and a line drive to the left field line. It is a fair ball into the left field corner. Extra bases for Soto. Eaton scores, standing without a play as the throw goes in toward third. The magic one. Juan Soto with the RBI double. Bases loaded, one out, two runs home, bottom of the first. Here's the pitch. Swing and a pop-up. Shallow right toward the line. Out goes Goldschmidt and Wong in the right fielder Martinez coming in. And the ball drops. In from third is Soto to score. Everyone moves up one base. Robles on at first. Unbelievable. The pitch. Swing and a base hit through the hole in the left field. Kendrick scores from third. Round at third. Coming home is Zimmerman. He slides in across the plate. 5-0 Nationals. Bottom of the first. Swing and a fly ball. Left field toward the line. Ozuna on the run. Can't get there. Drops in for a base hit. Scoring is Robles behind him. Coming in from second is Gomes. On a single to left. Two runs batted in for Trey Turner.
Seven runs on six hits in the first inning of game number four. Now, the difference is that when the Cardinals plated 10 runs in the first inning of game five in the NLDS, they did it in Atlanta. So the Braves were already down 10-0 before they ever stepped in the batter's box. In this particular case, the Nationals had the last at bat, right? Because they're the home team. But to be able to plate seven runs on six hits still creates the same end result. You have a massive cushion for your starting pitcher and whatever guys and whatever arms you have to use out of your bullpen, which is, of course, always critical for the Nats because they had the league worst bullpen in 2019. But to see the way their starting pitching operated, and that includes Patrick Corbin, yes, he gave up some runs, but he also struck out 12. To see the timely hitting, more than enough run support, combined with a starting rotation that allowed just 4 earned runs in 26 and two-thirds innings, it was a masterpiece. The NLCS was a masterpiece. And while they haven't won anything yet, certainly this serves to bury the past. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Within this broad story of redemption, there are so many individual stories that I absolutely love. I've talked about Howie Kendrick multiple times on this show in the last week, of course, not only because he had 3 very visible, timely errors in the NLDS against LA, but because he also had that 10th inning grand slam. And since then, he has been on a hot streak. 5 for 15, 4 doubles in the NLCS, and 4 RBI. But this is more like the Howie Kendrick that we saw all year. At 36 years old, this guy just hit a career best 344 in the regular season. And if you're not familiar with his history, his recent history, he tore his Achilles in May of 2018. For a lot of 30-somethings, mid-30-somethings, guys who'd already played a decade in their respective sport, that would have been enough. It would have been the end. But he assured the Nationals, who had signed him to a free agent deal after he was traded there in 2017 from Philadelphia, he assured the Nationals that he would be back. He assured them that he was going to continue playing. And he validates their faith in him by having his career best batting average. And then follows that up with the hit in Game 5 against the Dodgers, and now the NLCS MVP for everything he did in these 4 games against St. Louis.
You know, I first came here in 2017. I was traded over here. And, you know, I fell in love with the city, fell in love with the guys on this team. Being here, getting hurt last year, I was miserable being at home. But I knew all the hard work would pay off. And coming back this year, you know, all of us made it worth it. And all the sweat, blood, and tears, and grinding, and the losses, the wins, everything comes down to this moment right here. And I can truly say this is the best time of my career. The best moments of my career have happened this year.
I've heard it multiple times, and I still get chills listening to Howie Kendrick on TBS. But, of course, the fans there in Nationals Park could hear him post-game as well. He's 36. Kurt Suzuki, the catcher, is 36. Max Scherzer's 35. Anibal Sanchez is 35. Fernando Rodney's ancient compared to them. He's 42. The man needs a cart to get in from the bullpen. Oh, and apparently Sean Doolittle does too, even though he's only 33. And how about the original Nat? Their first draft pick, the longest tenured member of the organization, Ryan Zimmerman, who finally gets to realize a World Series with the only team he's ever known.
I was 20 years old when I got here. We were not very good. And the fans, you know, I still talk to season ticket holders now that have been here since RFK. And, you know, we went through those things together. And right around, you know, 2012 when we made that first push, things started to change a little bit and the expectations were raised.
It's amazing, the journey. And I love what Howie Kendrick had to say. It's worth all the blood, sweat, and tears. It's worth all of the losing, all of the failures, all of the stops, all of the moments in which you second-guessed and hesitated and doubted. Because it's only the end of your story if you quit. It's only the end of your story if you give up. And these guys collectively had to push through after a start in which they could have just thrown in the towel. Instead, they turned it into the best season in franchise history. And now they await the winner of the American League Championship Series and their opponent in the Fall Classic. It's got a nice ring to it, doesn't it? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We know that the Nationals pitching happened to the Cardinals, but still, this is a tough way for them to go out. Outscored 20-6 in four games, never having led in this series. I actually saw this nerd alert. Jason Stark won't mind if I brand it that because he is the coolest kind of nerd. Former colleague of mine at my previous network. He's now with The Athletic. But he said there's only one other team in baseball history who had ever won a seven-game series without trailing for even one pitch of said series. The Orioles in 1966 won the World Series by sweeping, scoring first, and never losing the lead in any game. Well, the Nationals joined them in that rarefied territory. Pretty incredible. But obviously for the Cardinals, it's painful because they're going to feel like they had more to give.
I'm proud of this group. I mean, we got a good group of guys that care about winning. Obviously, we didn't play good. We didn't hit the ball. But that's part of baseball. I mean, we got to learn from this and move on.
Once you get in the playoffs, you never know what's going to happen. That's why it's fun to get in. But, you know, good to win that first series, but very disappointed we didn't play better baseball in the second.
Two of the veterans for the Cardinals who set the tone for them, Yadier Molina, who had some massive hits and at-bats going back to the division series, and then Adam Wainwright. Could be the last we see of him with the Cardinals. Came in relief in game number four when Dakota Hudson was forced out in the first inning. A lot of heart, a lot of fight. We didn't really see it until the final innings of game number four. But it doesn't take away from what the Cardinals accomplished this year as the NL Central champs and getting back to the NLCS for the first time since 2014. However, this moment, this morning, belongs to the Washington Nationals and Bryce Harper. Why? It's his birthday today. From the category of you can't make this stuff up. It is Bryce Harper's birthday. What? No. I would have thought that was a joke. In a movie script, you would think it was jumping the shark. Cliche. Too contrived. No, it's actually his birthday. October 16th. So happy birthday, Bryce. I prefer to believe until we hear from Bryce, which, you know, we hear from Bryce publicly and you don't know if that's necessarily his true feelings. If he's smart, he takes the high road. But I want to believe that he's happy for his former teammates. They're not the ones that didn't give him the money he wanted, the contract he wanted. So why would you hold a grudge against them? Why would you have anything bad to say about guys like Max Scherzer and Ryan Zimmerman, of course, and Howie Kendrick that he played with for a bit? Why would you have anything bad to say about Trey Turner? I mean, they have nothing to do with writing the checks. But Bryce Harper is human. He's competitive. He's fiery. I am those things as well. Human, competitive, fiery. And as much as I might love the people that I played with, this would burn me up. If it's me, it ruins my birthday. But that's just me. A lot of money. Can't buy you a World Series appearance. And he has to watch. Come on. The majority of us would admit this would be extremely difficult. Although potentially a motivating factor for Bryce as well. So really cool stage, Nationals Park. Really cool moment. We talked to some fans who were there last night. Congratulations to the Nationals on reaching their first World Series. We still await their opponent from the AL. So we'll get to that series, which could hit a snag coming up on Wednesday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
First pitch. And that's hit in the air and pretty deep to left center field. Racing back, Gardner still going back at the wall. Looking up. See you later. Into the bullpen. Jose Altuve with his 12th career postseason homer. And the Astros go up 1-0. 1-2, it's a breaking ball. That's drilled deep down the right field line. And you can kiss it goodbye. Into the second deck. Reddick with a homer. And the Astros go up 2-0.
Here's the pitch, and he got him. Strike three upstairs on the breaking ball. And Judge goes down. 7 punch outs for Garrett Cole. 2 away. Here's the 1-1. That one's hit to center field. Playable for Springer. And he's got it. 7 scoreless for Garrett Cole. He is a man as he marches back to the dugout. And we'll go to the 8th inning. The Astros lead it 4-0.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
There were a lot of runners left on base in Game 3 between the Astros and Yankees. The difference being the few times when the Astros were able to push runners across, but the 2 solo home runs didn't come with anybody on base. So Josh Reddick, Jose Altuve getting a couple of shots off Luis Severino, and then we had to see Garrett Cole kind of work his way through some jams. He was not the Garrett Cole that's lights out striking out 15. He didn't have 10 strikeouts like he did in Game 5 of the ALDS against the Rays. But if I can say so, I think I was more impressed by the way that he went batter to batter and had to pitch his way out of difficult situations. And while you can't say this about every pitcher every time, he was better and more formidable as the game wore on. Not sure if you know this, but he grew up a Yankees fan. So he went to Yankee Stadium 7 times as a kid with his dad. In addition to that, he's said publicly his favorite Yankees are Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera. This was the franchise that he rooted for. And he bypassed a chance to join the Yankees right out of high school. He was drafted by the Yankees, and he and his dad went through an entire analysis, the pros and cons of joining the Yankees and playing for this franchise that he loved, or going to UCLA, getting a college education, and taking that route to the major leagues. Fascinating story, which I heard from Robert Ford and Steve Sparks, the voices of the Astros radio network. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Severino managed to get into the 5th inning, which was huge. Considering the way the bullpen had been taxed in Game 2 for both teams. But the Yankees, if they play on Wednesday, planning probably to do more of a bullpen starter, an opener, so to speak. In that case, the bullpen needed Severino to last as long as he possibly could. He stranded the bases loaded in the 1st inning, but so did Garrett Cole. Cole also walked a pair of Yankees in the 4th before he escaped. First time in over a year that Cole had walked at least 4 batters. But in the 7th inning, and you heard a couple of those outs there, in the 7th inning, it was his best work. A perfect bottom of the 7th that preserved a scoreless outing with 4 hits. He did give up 5 walks, but he also got the 7 strikeouts, and they seemed to be the strikeouts when he most needed them. So not vintage Garrett Cole necessarily, maybe not Cy Young Garrett Cole, but impressive nonetheless.
Felt like I was crisp coming out of the gate, and then faltered a little bit with the command, a little bit self-inflicted. But once again, just boiled down to making some good pitches under pressure, getting fortunate on the DD ball, playing some good defense towards the end of the ball game.
He's the best pitcher in baseball right now. I mean, his competition is right next to him in the clubhouse, and they're certainly a good pitcher. I watch what Strasburg's doing. I see what Scherzer's doing. DeGrom in this city. I mean, there's a lot of big names, but obviously I'm biased to my guys.
AJ Hinch referring to the wealth of arms in the New York Metro. So not just the franchise that is the Yankees, but also mentioning Jacob DeGrom, the reigning Cy Young for the National League and the Mets. It's been a really impressive display from Garrett Cole. We also saw what Justin Verlander did while he was out there on the mound in a game 2 in which he did not factor in the decision. But the rain, the weather right now is the mitigating factor in this series. Even with the Astros up 2-1, the rain, if it happens to come through the way that meteorologists are forecasting, could be a huge advantage for the New York Yankees. Not only because they had to rely so much on their bullpen in these last two games, but specifically on Tuesday, but because they might be able to line up the rotation a little better in addition to resting that bullpen. That could also be the case for the Astros. So, very mysterious. Neither team has announced a plan for game number four. Only know from Aaron Boone that he was planning on it being more of an opener. So a kind of a bullpen game by committee, so to speak. But this could change everything. In case you're... Oh, we had one caller earlier. What did he say? What do you predict for the... That's what he said. What do you predict for the weather on Wednesday? I'm just going to refer to my sources, the meteorologists. And what they're saying is that the rain in the New York City area is likely going to start late afternoon about the or mid-afternoon about the time at the rush hour gets revved up. It's brilliant. I'm so glad I'll be sleeping. And it's supposed to move southwest and northeast and hit the Bronx at the worst possible time. But again, it could end up being a benefit to both pitching staff, so we will see. For now, though, it's not as much the pitching as it is Aaron Boone's guys, the guys he calls savages, leaving nine savages on in game number three and going 0-for-6 with runners in scoring position. They had their opportunities. They just could not capitalize.
It's obviously a little frustrating. We weren't able to break through with them, but I think, you know, up and down, we gave ourselves a chance. And anytime you're facing a guy like that, you know, you want that kind of traffic. And we had that in several innings.
It just takes that one swing to kind of get us rolling and, you know, kind of break through. But we just weren't able to get that big hit. You know, and I had a situation, I think, maybe in the third or fourth where I had two guys on and wasn't able to come through. So it's, you know, this is the postseason. You got to come through in those situations.
In the end, Garrett Cole decided, Garrett Cole and his dad, in doing this analysis about joining the Yankees out of high school or going to UCLA, they decided that he could better serve his baseball career if he got not just a college education, but also had the experience of pitching for a big time program in Los Angeles. But I bet that was a bit surreal. He has been to Yankee Stadium more times as a fan than he had pitched there. It was only his second start in the Bronx. And so for him, I can't imagine it was nerves, but you know what? This is a different stage. I mean, this is the ALCS. Even though he's been staring down these challenges all season, has put together some kind of an otherworldly campaign. But still, really amazing how he fought and scratched and clawed and got through it. And now the Astros have this 2-1 lead, but Mother Nature could decide she feels like it's not interesting enough. So, you know, let's throw a wrench into things, shall we? You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. If you haven't voted for TD of the Week, you've got mere seconds to go. And also on our Facebook page, coming up, we're going to pivot. We'll work in your calls if you want to talk baseball. We're going to pivot to football as well. The Rams were busy on Tuesday, and we've got an announcement, sort of, from the Tennessee Titans.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You're listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon.
One man to beat 10. He's gone.
They throw in the end zone. Touchdown.
Made a guy miss. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown.
Southern Salting into the end zone. Touchdown.
The people have spoken, and one score stands above the rest. Here is your TD of the week. The Houston Texans.
Second and goal at the one. Deshaun calls for the ball. Here's the snap. Watson fakes the give, steps out to his left. Watson wants to run, and he dives for the goal line. He's in! Deshaun Watson twisting his way into the end zone to grab the lead for Houston.
Wonderful feeling to be able to deal with all the adversity, the up and downs of the flows of the game, and to be able to keep fighting for 60 minutes. That's what we did. We never got discouraged. We kept fighting. We kept pushing. We kept encouraging. And that's the biggest part about that this locker room.
Deshaun Watson, your choice. His touchdown late against the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium, your choice. for TD of the Week, the call with Mark Vandermeer on the Texans Radio Network. Pretty good competition amongst those candidates, and we always have write-in votes as well. This past Sunday, the Texans definitely made life more complicated for themselves because they had those three turnovers in Kansas City, but they also doubled up the Chiefs in time of possession. That was a very notable stat that does, in fact, tell the story. 40 minutes to 20 for Kansas City. And what did they do? They ran for nearly 200 yards. We've seen the blueprint now, the prototype for how you limit the Chiefs' effectiveness and the MVP. When he's sitting and watching on the sidelines, he can't do a darn thing to help his team win. And in back-to-back home games, the Chiefs, as well as the Texans, have run the ball, controlled the ball, and kept Mahomes off the field. That is a piece of what I wrote about this week in my weekly football column. It may have a Howie Kendrick reference in it. I'm not really sure. I need to go back and read it again to be confident that I managed to keep all baseball elements out of it. I was taking notes about the baseball while I was writing this column, and I asked my mom to go back and read it for me because I was worried that I might put in a few sentences that didn't make sense. She said it was good. But it's about what's old, the throwback being new again. Woody Hayes is featured in my column. I can tell you without any reservation, this is the first time in my life I've included Woody Hayes in anything that I've written about football, but I was really proud of myself. Also a pop culture reference in there I'm proud of. I try every week to infuse a little pop culture into it. So I know some of you have read it already. I was a little bit nervous about sharing it because I don't know how focused I was when I was writing it, but I appreciate your feedback. Thank you very much. And also, some of you hearing the CBS Sports Minute, I'm not going to give it away. You got to listen to the very end, otherwise you won't get it. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. You can find me on Twitter and my column on A-Law Radio and also on our Facebook. Oh, no, I didn't post it on Facebook yet. See, brain is tired. I will post it on Facebook as soon as I'm done, I promise. But thanks so much for checking it out. We appreciate always your comments as we wade through what is a nutty month of October, and certainly your questions for Ask Amy Anything. Also, thank you for listening to our podcast. We had humongous numbers, lots of downloads in September. So I thank you, but I also thank the NFL. Before I get back to the top story in the NFL from Tuesday, let's talk to Eric, who's in L.A. Eric, welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy, how are you doing?
Fantastic.
Well, you know, I got to congratulate Jared Cole. This is a guy that I know personally from UCLA. Got a chance to check him out. He was a great, great competitor. And I'm very glad that he won the game. I got to say something about the Nationals. I mean, I realize that as a Dodger fan that I could be crying right now. But really, I have to give the Nationals a lot of credit for what they have done this year. Mm. And the fact that they had this never-say-die attitude. And I can't fault the Dodgers for falling down the stretch, because the thing that is important is good pitching is always going to beat good hitting. And the thing about the Nationals, I like to see the Nationals win the World Series. And you're talking a little bit about food a few minutes ago. Got to try Whataburger if you're down in the Phoenix area.
It's not just in Phoenix, though, is it? I feel like there are other places where you can find it, no?
Absolutely. I mean, they have some very, very good burgers. I mean, they're juicy onion rings. I tried it for the very first time this year when I was down in Phoenix.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. It seems like there are definite burger recommendations. Wherever I go, people will write and tell me, this is where you have to try a burger.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful morning there, Amy. I'll check your Ask Amy out in a little bit.
All right, good. Thanks for listening to our podcast, and we appreciate the call.
Bye.
855-212-4227. I cannot remember right now. Again, please forgive me, the brain is tired, but I'm pretty sure the Super Bowl is in Glendale sometime in the next 3 years. It's Miami in 2000. Well, it's Miami for this season, so 2020. I think it's Tampa in 2021. Then it goes to L.A., right, and the new space station they're building, the new home for the Rams and the Chargers. Then maybe it's Glendale. Or maybe it's Glendale first and then L.A. Huh. I'm pretty confident Glendale is in the rotation, though. Why are you guys looking at me funny? Or not looking at me at all, actually? And
we're looking it up. We went to the Google.
Oh, the Google. So what did the Google have to say?
Still looking.
Oh, my gosh. You guys. Okay, you just raise your hand when you get to it. Sunday, the NFL on CBS is at Lambeau Field. Lambeau! With the Packers hosting the Raiders. Plus a key AFC South clash between Houston and Indianapolis, top two teams in that division. All begins with JB and the guys getting you ready for all of the action on the NFL today at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, only on CBS. While we're talking about the AFC South, Jalen Ramsey is no longer a participant in that division race. Instead, he is now with the Los Angeles Rams. So this is kind of crazy, right? Because we just talked about this in the last 48 hours. I had a caller who wanted to know about Jalen Ramsey, and I told him what I'd heard, what we'd all heard, which is that the asking price was 2 first-round draft picks and that Shad Khan, the owner of the Jaguars, didn't really want to trade him and would only do it if they got their asking price. Well, what do you know? The Rams' first deal, Marcus Peters, to the Ravens, which created some major speculation that something was happening behind the scenes with L.A. because they just put Aqib Talib on the injured reserve. So their top two corners, Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters, both gone, essentially. Something had to give. In comes Jalen Ramsey. Two first-round draft picks. So both sides are winners in this deal. Although the owner wanted to keep him, instead he gets a pair of first-round draft picks, as well as a fourth-rounder. And now Ramsey has a fresh start. Who knows if this will make him happy? And who knows if the back injury is legit? Something tells me maybe it wasn't, since the Rams were willing to give up 2 first-round draft picks. But he does have to pass a physical. Should be available to play Sunday against the Falcons in Atlanta. Amazing, the healing powers of a trade. Wow, poof. It's like a magic wand. His back is so much better after flying across the country. Because, you know, everybody's back is better when they spend 6 hours in an airplane seat. Mm-hmm. So, that heart-to-heart that Shad Khan had with Jalen Ramsey didn't change the mind of Ramsey, and now he is out. See ya. On his way to Los Angeles. Interesting. Now, the Rams, of course, are going for broke here because they just dropped 3 games in a row. They've fallen back to 500. And so for them, this is, hey, we're all in. In fact, willing to trade away the 2 draft picks in 20 and 21 that may or may not be high first-round draft picks, but that takes them out of the first round now for year 4 and 5 in a row, unless, of course, they would trade back in. So there's a little bit of desperation here. Definitely wanting to shake up their defense. As for the Tennessee Titans, the shakeup is coming on offense. Coach Mike Vrabel decided to make the change official. Ryan Tannehill is the new starter, according to multiple sources. Now, this was first reported by NFL Network. It's out there now, though, even though the Titans haven't officially announced it. But this is a new opportunity for Tannehill. So remember, he got traded after the Dolphins went a different direction. And Marcus Mariota, who just 3 weeks ago had a 3-touchdown game and looked brilliant. I mean, as brilliant as you would expect from Mariota, kind of the ceiling. And it's not just him. It wasn't just him against the Broncos. The team got shut out. Lots of sacks, turnovers though. And in desperation, Vrabel made the change to Tannehill. Now Tannehill also threw a pick, and if I'm not mistaken, got sacked 4 times himself. I mean, it wasn't that much better. They didn't score, but he's decided now that he wants to see if this will spark the offense. So 2 major storylines coming from the NFL. I know. I know that you want the other storyline coming from the NFL. You need some closure, don't you? The NFL's executive VP, Troy Vincent, in Fort Lauderdale for the league's fall meetings, weighing in on those illegal hands-to-the-face penalties against Trey Flowers on Monday Night Football.
It was a late night last night. There was a pool report that I'm assuming that most have read. There was one that was clear that we support, and there was other that when you look at it, you review the play, not something that you want to see called, in particular on the pass rush. One that you can support, but the other one, clearly after you review it, you've seen some slow-mos, the foul wasn't there.
Troy Vincent, one of those calls we can support. The other one, not so much. So there you go, Lions fans, football fans, that's the best you're going to get. One of the hands-to-the-face penalties was deserved, the other was not. So there's a little bit in there for everyone. Again, that's in Fort Lauderdale. And Troy Vincent also said he was planning to talk to Lions ownership. So Martha Ford wanted to make sure that he talked to her. I don't know how you make it better. I don't know how you say, hey, can we let bygones be bygones? But if Matt Patricia can get the Lions to move on, and really there is no time to waste. That's how quickly things move in the NFL from week to week. But if he can get his team pointed forward, I'm quite certain that fans can do so too. You don't have time to brood. Come on now. Matt Patricia's building something. Now, coming up on our next show, so it'll be our fourth show of the work week, we also have the competition committee chair, Rich McKay, from Atlanta. He's giving you his perspective on the change the pass interference rules. So I don't have time to get to him on this show because of the Nationals and the ALCS. We could end up having a dark night in baseball, though. It was a dark and stormy night. There could end up being no game. So we're watching the weather. I know you're watching the weather. The Nationals couldn't care less about the weather because they're already through. But we'll definitely let you hear from Rich McKay, who was asked specifically about the new PI rules and whether or not it's effective. And also what he thinks about the first 6 weeks with the flags and the reaction to all the flags. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. I asked producer Chris if he would pull up the latest results from Survivor Island and tell us how many people we have now inhabiting our two islands.
Do have an update, and first some housekeeping. The next five Super Bowls are as followed: Miami, Tampa, L.A., Glendale, and New Orleans.
I see. I was right. I had it right. Always go with your first answer.
For all those interested parties. All right, so in our
in
first
case you're
pool,
keeping score at home.
Our main pool, we lost 23 this week, and we are down to just 70. And then in pool number two, we lost 10. We are down to 41. So just over 100 left on Survivor Island. Congrats to all who are still swimming.
Not include us. We actually all have been eaten by the sharks. Stripped clean. Stripped bare. I actually decided I would go in first as the leader of the team. And I would just get it over with. So, you know, I didn't last. But we're done. Congratulations to those of you who are still on Survivor Island. That includes a family member of mine who was gloating in a text on Tuesday. All right, we're back tonight. Let's see if we have an ALCS game, but we're here no matter what. After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.